Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
The Athletic.
Hello everybody, it's Reece Porter here and welcome to the Fulhamish Podcast.
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James and welcome to the show brought to you by The Athletic UK. And thank you very much to our brilliant star announcer, Reece Porter, for introducing the podcast today. What an absolute legend. Thank you so much for doing that. And on the pod, we're going to be discussing Fulham's 1-1 draw at Bristol City, as Fulham made it 3 games in the last 4 in the league without a win. Is the ship off course? It certainly seems so. It needs a good captain to get it back into the straight and narrow. And here to discuss yesterday's point at Bristol City is Mr. Nathan Martin. Hello.
Hello.
Ben Jarman.
Hello, everyone. Hello, listeners.
And Dan Cook.
Hello, hello, Sammy.
Nathan, are you a smug American today? Because your continent, your nation, your compatriots are doing fairly well in the Gulf.
We are. I was told I wasn't allowed to talk about it. I did enjoy, I'm not really, I have to be honest, like Jarman and I were talking about the boxing last night and neither one of us know that much. I don't know that much about the golf, but I'm glad to see, you know, the red, white and blue doing their thing. And I really enjoyed seeing that guy just absolutely thwack it. It was a 400 plus yard drive down the fairway. And so whenever, you know, in the proud tradition of whatever the Adam Sandler movie is and Shooter McGavin and all the rest of that, we just believe in going long all the time. So glad to see the red, white, and blue doing their thing.
It was very, I think it was Bryson DeChambeau, wasn't it? It was very Happy Gilmore.
It was like, very Happy Gilmore.
If I hit my drive half that far, I'm really happy. So it just puts into context. One more thing I want to ask you, Nathan, just on the golf. Has there been a memo change in how you guys say USA, USA? Because every time I've heard it, the Ryder Cup, it seems to become some kind of like slower, like USA. And I just wondered if Biden, if this is a new administration thing, has changed, changed how you chant USA.
Wisconsin, right?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Well, they got to make sure Biden can keep up with it. I mean, he's a little bit, you know, slower on that sort of thing. So we just want to make sure that we don't leave the president behind. So. No, I have no idea. I have no idea if there's been a change in, you know, I'm about to go back to the U.S. for the first time in 2 years, effectively next month. So I will ask people on the ground and report back to you if I missed the American memo on that side of things.
Okay, maybe it's because you're in the U.K. That's why you missed the memo. If you were in the States, you definitely would have got the national address that clearly came forward. Okay, let's get some three-word reviews from yesterday's game. Dan, you were taking a look through them. What came through?
Yeah, started off with Twitter. We had Bar Novar from FFC South Devon referring to us hitting the bar 3 times and then Bristol City's offside equaliser.
Very good.
From our very own AF, we had ship refueling paused as we've docked a little bit just to refuel on the HMS.
If you can get it at the moment.
I'm very right. Smug with my electric car over here. So
there we go.
Oh, there he is.
Everyone's switched off now after hearing that.
We had Zachary Luca with Ultimate Crossbar Challenge. Over on Instagram, we had Jay Lazerk with West Country Woes. And finally, a little bit tenuous potentially, but another Fulhamish contribution from Farrell Monk. We had Reece Porter's Blau Eye Army to round off our 3-word reviews.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. Reece Porter's Blau Army. It certainly was yesterday, and gutted we didn't get the 3 points for Reece yesterday, but a brilliant moment for the celebration for the first goal. And Jarms, let's come on to the game then. We were almost beyond words, weren't we, after the match yesterday. We just couldn't quite sum up what we'd seen and how Fulham had come away from a match with so many chances. It's twice in a week now where I just cannot fathom how Fulham haven't got more out of a game. I wouldn't say we pummeled Bristol City, but we certainly did in the last 10, and it was a hard one to take.
Yeah, it was definitely a hard one to take. I mean, I think you took it the hardest in the whole of the stadium because I had to remind you for the 45 minutes after the match that we didn't actually lose. me and Sammy were queuing up for a burger afterwards, and Sammy was about to do a tweet and he was like, I can't believe we've lost today. I had to tap him on the shoulder and be like, Sammy, you know we haven't lost this game. We've drawn. But actually, like, in terms of the whole day, yes, it was lovely just to be back at an away game for the first time since Millwall, seeing so many like lovely faces. So I see, like, obviously I sat with Sammy and I sat with Jack, and I saw Charlie Cooper was there. Jeff Pruce was there. I haven't seen Jeff in a very long time. Obviously, really nice to see Reece Porter there and the reception he got. Thomas Young as well was floating around in the crowd. So so many notable faces at that away day. It seemed really well attended. But yeah, I mean, as a spectacle on the whole, I think the game, Fulham, we were creating chance after chance, but I think that the balance was definitely off in the first half. I think tactically, Silva got it wrong. His selection was wrong in the first half. We had a midfield set up that had too many similar type of players in there, and we just weren't creating enough clear-cut chances. In the second half, when we brought on Harrison Reed, and we seemed to readdress the balance there, and I thought Bobby Reed in the second half, in the 10, was actually really, really good. I know we slightly disagreed on this, Sammy, after the game. You weren't as on board of it as I was, but I thought he was great. The impetus that he gave us going forward and the way he kept picking up pockets of space, and I thought that was really encouraging. I feel like about this Fulham team, mentally, we're starting to snatch at chances now because we realise how many chances that we're starting to create and carve out for each other, and we're just not putting them away. I feel like in any other game other than the one yesterday, Mitrovic would have put that chance in the 80, 90th minute away with his right foot. There's no way in any other situation he's going to take that with his left foot unless he's either not confident he's going to put it in the back of the net or we're starting to snatch at chances. And it was just one of countless chances that I'm sure we'll come across in all the podcasts. One for Harry Wilson, one for Cavallero, a couple for Mitrovic, you know, hitting the bar a couple of times. It was rash from Fulham, and I wish that we would have just calmed down and just knew that second goal would have come after the Bristol City equaliser.
Nathan, what was your thoughts on the first half? As Ben kind of alluded to there, that the Chalobah-Onuma pairing in the middle didn't quite work. It was so effective, particularly Chalobah and Seri against Birmingham about 10 days ago. But yesterday it was just a bit stale, and Fulham were really not creating clear-cut chances. I can only think of one clear-cut chance in that first half, and that was the nice back heel from Wilson, which fell to Onuma, which was fairly tame effort in the end. But it just wasn't clicking, even though some of the football was quite pretty at times.
Yeah, it was a bit odd because, I mean, I wasn't in the grounds like you guys, but watching it on the Bristol City stream, which is a side note, have probably the worst set of commentators I think I've ever heard in my life. Like maybe it's an ex-player or whatever, but just really dire. I mean, even ESPN the Ocho wouldn't put that on air. It was really horrible.
No gentleman Jim.
It was no gentleman Jim. And maybe that's my fault. But you know, the reality is watching it on the stream, I didn't think we looked quite as bad as maybe it felt in the ground. Like we were controlling, you know, we were controlling the game. We weren't creating enough chances for my liking. So I agree with Ben. But on the other hand, you know, Bristol City had very, very little. I mean, whatever sort of openings they had were because we fluffed our lines. I mean, that was kind of like the reality for most of the game. It wasn't that they were creating some beautiful, intricate play. It was the fact that we would muddle something up. And so watching the first half, you know, I wanted to see us do better off that Harry Wilson back heel. But we were sort of breaking down. And the only thing that was bothering me in that first half was just a little bit a lack of composure, the build-up play. You know, maybe that's the problem of that imbalance. But it just seemed like we were moving quickly. We were attacking. But it didn't seem quite as cohesive. And I think while last year we would get frustrated that we wouldn't just, you know, ping the ball in for a cross in the box, this year we're maybe going to that a bit too quick. And it's sort of, you know, you would like to see some of those players of the wings, you know, attack the defense rather than looking for that sort of early cross. And, you know, that's what happened in the second half. We did a bit better on that side and good things opened up.
One of the things I was really actually focusing on during that first half was our midfield. trio, and namely Onuma and Chalabar. And I actually thought it started pretty well in the first sort of 5 or 10 minutes. There was a couple of moments when Josh Onuma would drop in, and it created a hell of a lot of space for Nathaniel Chalabar to get in behind. It's happened a couple of times, just an easy ball straight through the middle, opened up by the space that Onuma was creating. But then after that, they sort of frustratingly offered very, very little. And I don't actually think it was necessarily Silva's fault. I mean, you can debate about the selection, but tactically, I don't think they were doing what he wanted them to do. He was furious at times in that first half. I was watching him at the fact that neither of them were offering for the ball. They were both placed up very high in the channels along Bristol City's back four, which meant that it was very difficult for Seri to make any sort of progressive passes up to them because they were so high up. And he was screaming at them to just one of them at least drop in an offer. And they didn't. And I think that was one of our big problems, is that we couldn't make any progression through the middle of the pitch during that first half. Everything had to go out wide because we just didn't have the options. And I think that's why the Reed Cabana substitution, which I'm sure we'll come on to, made a big difference at halftime, because Harrison Reed offered that a little bit more by dropping that little bit deeper.
Yeah, when Harrison Reed came on, Ben, it was chalk and cheese to the performance that we saw in the first half. The impetus was there, and it felt like a matter of time before Fulham did find the back of the net, and ultimately it did only take 4 minutes, and there was chances before that. We just looked so fresh. Bristol City didn't know what to do when Reed came on, and Gabano had his contribution to that as well, but it did really feel like Reed was the driving force behind that second half extra boost of energy.
Yeah, Reed was the glue between the lines, I think you'd like to say. I think one thing about the first half, just to add to Dan's point, we were very, very compartmentalised. We were way too open in the middle of the pitch. There wasn't enough sort of distance to get a cohesive passing patterns going, and we looked very, very, almost like we were chancing our arm quite a lot in the first half. The second half came on, it was, as you say, chalk and cheese. The balance was resumed. We went to a sort of like flat, double pivot there with Seri and Reed being the more progressive, and I think that just gave Seri more room to operate. I think his intelligence on the ball is really, really understated at times, and I think that the way that he passes it, shifts it, moves it, 1-2 touches is everything you need to get through the thirds really quickly against a team that wanted just to set up and just try and nullify Fulham for long periods of time. As you say, then the introduction of Cabano and moving Bobby Reed into the middle allowed those passing lanes to become much smaller. And I think you see this today in a lot of modern football, is that the shorter and snappier the passes are, the easier it is to move through the transition. And what I think that Bobby Reed and the way that he moved around was very similar to Fabio Carvalho. And I'm sure we'll touch on Fabio Carvalho later in the comments and in the questions at the end. But it is incredible how over-reliant we've become on someone who's only played less than 10 games for Fulham, and how much of a key cog he is in that number 10, especially in the transition with his pace, getting in the pockets, getting beyond Mitrovic. Because when you have Onuma and you have Chalabar, they're not going to get beyond Mitrovic. And if they do, they're probably not going to offer the same pace, and they're definitely not going to offer the same instinctive strike that Carvalho has. But yeah, I think the introduction of Reed was great. He's been someone that we've been desperately missing for a long time. And I think if you look at the midfield pairing of Seri and Reed, that is a Premier League pairing. I mean, it might be bottom of the Premier League pairing, like bottom half. But if you said to someone like Southampton, based on their performance today, would you take Reed and Seri? I think they probably would. And I think you'd probably take it as well in a lot of other teams. And we're lucky to have them. And I think that the more we get Reed back in the side and we find that missing link at number 10, which hopefully is Carvalho when he comes back, the more dangerous we'll become.
Southampton really did have their opportunity to have Harrison Reed. You know, I feel like if they want him back now, it's too late, lads. You can't do a Lukaku on us. Nathan, I felt like the only threat Bristol City offered was kind of crosses into the box and their long throws as well. Another long throws FC in the championship. Never saw Thomas Kallas do that for us. Thomas Kallas had that in the locker, but that was how their best chance in the first half came. Naki Wells air kicked a very, very good chance, and Fulham seemed to struggle a little bit with that aerial bombardment, and I'm a tad worried that we didn't deal with it a bit better. And I guess, you know, we've been talking about Alfie Mawson, and, you know, does he get in the team, does he not get in the team? That is the one thing that I know that Alfie Mawson would deal with better.
Can I also, I don't know if anyone else listening felt the same way, but I totally forgot that Chris Martin played for them. And so like particularly listening to Bristol City announcers, the sort of hope and expectation when Martin would get the ball, oh, here we go. Come on, son, come on. And then the dying of those expectations and hope when Martin would do something stupid, was actually really satisfied, a bit of Schadenfreude or whatever you might say. But yeah, no regret about seeing him.
It's just like, which Chris Martin would you rather have up front? Fat Chris Martin or Chris Martin from Coldplay? I think I'd rather have the guy from Coldplay.
I think he probably would at least distract them, and you know, maybe something would open up in the side. Quicker. Yeah, but no. What does concern me, Sammy, and it was how they equalized was, you know, we are sort of just like if you just pelt us with balls in the 6 yard box or the AR, whether it's coming from a header, whether it's coming from a quarter kick. We just don't do a good enough job of really clearing our lines. And, you know, Gazzaniga made some great saves yesterday. I mean, you know, you'd be hard pressed to really fault him or say that Rodak, you know, Rodak, who played really well the other night against Leeds, we're really lucky, as a side note, to have two top quality keepers on our side. Gazzaniga made some ridiculous, like sort of instinct saves. But the problem is that we don't clear our lines. We don't clean that out. And it's bitten us for a few years now. I don't put that on Ream. I think Tosin maybe doesn't do quite a good enough job of cleaning that out. And it does concern me going forward. Callis's throw settles down there, and you know that they should have done a lot better, and a better striker probably finishes that. If that's Ivan Toney, you know, if Brentford's still down with us, he finishes that. And so going forward, you know, if I'm Silva, I'd be really concerned, particularly if we can't put games away. If we're scoring 3 goals a game, we get that second goal, you know, maybe you have a little more of slack. But if we've got to win some of these 1-0 games, and we've just not figured out a way to do that.
I think the most concerning thing is when you look at it, is that Bristol changed the game by changing to a back three. They made a substitution that surprised me a little bit, bringing on Nathan Baker, and they moved to a back three. And that completely changed it. They managed to stretch us much wider, and they managed to get much more of an influence out wide. And we didn't adapt to it, which I thought was odd, because we played against the same system against Stoke and the same system against Birmingham, and we dealt with it really, really well. You know, Tosin was dominant, and in both of those games, he was able to be commanding in the area. But it seems like that change on the fly sort of threw us, and we didn't really adapt to it quick enough. And then after Bristol got their goal, we realised, oh, hang on, like we know how to play against this, and we started getting in behind them, in behind the high wing backs. But I think that period where we didn't adapt is where we lost our 2 points in this game, and that's just a slight concern for me.
I completely agree with that. I think that substitution in itself changed the whole of the game, and I think that the weird part is when you bring on a centre back, it's obviously seen sometimes as quite negative, but actually it gave Bristol City another lease of life, because their fullbacks were being pinged back quite dramatically by Wilson and Cabano on either side. It really started to push them back and push them infield a little bit, and that started to open up the channels. And one thing I actually said to you, Sammy, probably about halfway through the first half, I just turned to you and I was like, I'm so glad that Fulham don't play those pointless balls down the channel all the time. And then it was those sort of balls that were really starting to give us that trouble in that second half when they changed to the back three. And I just thought that, you know, as Dan rightly said, we played against this system, and you rightly said, we played against this system twice. We know how to field this system. Why did it take us that long to adapt? And I think that at times there will be, similar to Parker, where Marco Silva just isn't making these decisions quick enough. I also do think that the players need to have this understanding of what they're doing on the fly as well. The communication maybe needs to be slightly better, but I mean, I think when we turned it around, we were much the better side, and we could easily have had 2 or 3 goals in that last sort of 10, 15 minutes.
It's also hard to, like, you can blame Silva for not making these on the fly, but unlike Scott Parker, and I said this in the group at the time, like he does make those two halftime substitutions, which you sort of probably not see from Scott, you know, at any time. That was the difference in that moment. So, you know, some of this is Silva, but at the same time, you also wonder how much of this is the players needing to take a bit of responsibility. And we had so many opportunities. Mitrovic's volley that goes off the crossbar was just, you know, ridiculous. And I'm sure you could talk about 100 others.
Well, it was clear, wasn't it, that the Bristol City pressure was coming. They missed a couple of good chances before they equalised. There was a close range header which went over the bar, and it did feel a bit inevitable. But then it was almost more frustrating that, as you say, once they equalised, suddenly Fulham were unbelievable against the back three, because we really can exploit that. It's frustrating that in that kind of 70 to 80 minute mark that Fulham didn't go, oh, they're back to back three, we know how to deal with this. We kind of were just going through the motions and letting the pressure come onto us without taking the game to Bristol, trying to get that second goal. Of course, we were trying to get the second goal, but you could see how many chances we created in 3 minutes of injury time. Imagine if we'd been doing that since the kind of 70th minute when Bristol City made that substitution. It probably would have eventually. I know we were snatching at chances. It would have been 2-0 and dead and buried. But I mean, this is a common thing in football that you concede a goal and suddenly now we play good football. You know, it happens all the time, but it was almost more infuriating the fact that actually we learned suddenly, oh yeah, we can go and score a second goal. And then there's maybe a bit of, I don't know if it's naivety. I don't know if it's just a bit of passiveness almost that Fulham kind of let that game slide a bit.
I think it's just like, I feel in times it's just a lack of game management from Fulham and a little bit of naivety on our part. Is it like, when they made that substitution, the ball didn't really go out of play for like 5 minutes afterwards. And if you're Fulham and you feel like you're on your back foot, right, just kick the fucking ball out. Just give yourself 30 seconds, 45 seconds just to regroup. You know, just get your heads in the game. Allow the coach to bring a message on or something like that. Just pump the ball long or try and give yourself half a minute or so in possession just to try and go through the motions, try and understand how the other team is setting up. And that's where I think that some of the team and some of the players out there are quite naive. But at the same time, it's nice because we do have such a young squad that they will grow into the season as you go ahead. I mean, one thing we started to see was we were sort of managing the time much better before their substitution. And then like we were slowing stuff down. We were giving the ball back quite slowly. I do like that about Fulham, but I think that there is an element of naivety and also there's an element of arrogance about Fulham. But I think the arrogance is a good thing because I think that the players always believe that they can win and they can win any game in this league, right? But you have to have game management where if you are on the back foot, you are being pummeled for like 2 or 3 minutes. Just give yourself a break. Just get the ball out. It's fine.
The Ben Jarman school of centre back.
I thought our game management, weirdly as well, it improved in the moment after we conceded, because actually we were very smart the ground got whipped up, the home fans were up, they were ready, having been pretty docile for most of the game. And actually we just took the sting out of the game for about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. We just slowed the game right down. And it just begs the question, why did we take conceding to have that game management?
It's a frustrating one, Nathan, as well. The way the goal came about, look, I think that pressure was coming and there's not much you can analyse about their goal apart from one, it's clearly offside and I can't quite see how a linesman didn't see that. There was 3 or 4 Bristol City players in an offside position. But two, I feel like a bit of credit needs to go to Casey Palmer because that's a ridiculous angle he scored from. It's needle in a haystack stuff. I looked at that in the ground and thought, Gazzaniga saved that. It's probably going out for a corner. He might get to this, but that's 100% hitting the side netting. For him to actually bend his foot around it like that, it was impressive, but ultimately, if that's in the Prem, it's not even one of those offsides where people are getting angry because it's a toe offside. It's one of those where the line's another yard.
It's like the Ivan Toney offside last night where Brentford thought they had gone ahead, you know, against Liverpool, which we don't really want to talk about that game too much. But, you know, yeah, it was it was clearly offsides. It is a great finish. I mean, again, I just want to say it. Gazzaniga made some ridiculous saves in the lead up to that. And when he had saved one where it was an instinct header and he throws his hand back and pushes it over, that should have gone in. But when he made that first save that ends up being the goal, it was like, oh shit, we've dodged a bullet here. Then it obviously, you know, goes back in. We're not clearing our lines. And then it is a ridiculous finish. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those goals that it's just going to happen. It's the championship. If it's 90 minutes of sort of craziness, they're going to get a few chances like that. And, you know, their striker, unfortunately, it didn't fall to Chris Martin. If that falls to Chris Martin right there, you know, we've got 3 points and we're all feeling much better today. And Sammy's tweets are much happier. but, you know, poor Reese doesn't get the game that he deserved. Unfortunately, it doesn't fall to Chris Martin. So, you know, the real lesson and the moral of the story is we need to clear our lines. We need to be a bit smarter. But we also just got to put the ball in the back of the net and finish it. And, you know, that goes early in the game where Ottoma has a tame shot instead of passing it to Chalaba. you know, Wilson doesn't finish. I think Kabato misses a breakaway, doesn't go around the keeper. I mean, just the number of chances that we split them wide open. And you have to think this is where Fabio, you know, this is where he is just far better than his championship status, because he's putting those things away earlier in the year. And you have to think if one of those falls to him instead of Ottoma, who, despite all that, I actually have a lot of love for Ottoma. I think he's developing into a really good player, and I think he will continue to grow. I have a lot of time for him. His finishing needs a little bit of work. But if those fall to Fabio, we finish those. I think actually on another day, Wilson probably finishes them as well, because he's got that kind of striker's edge. So, you know, the moral of the story, we just can't get to 1-0 70 minutes in.
That was the Wilson chance absolutely bent my brain. I couldn't get my head around that. I was fuming at the ground. Me and Jack were just perplexed. Like, we were beside ourselves when he's through on goal and he tries to cut it back. Just shoot, man. Like, you have the angle. Right or left footed, you can definitely roof that. He's got the talent.
I think this is where we're a goal for each sort of those players away from going and winning these games sort of 3 or 4-0.
Yeah.
If Harry Wilson had maybe bagged against Reading,
yeah,
he's through on goal there and he shoots and he probably scores. Yeah. And I think that's just where our confidence has just dropped a little bit, because we started snatching at chances and it sort of just it pushes itself further on. So I think if he does shoot there and he scores, then, you know, things change. So I think if we can get him a goal, if we can get Bobby a goal, then hopefully we'll start putting these chances away, because finishing is such a confidence thing, because it's so intuitive and instinctive. And when you're second guessing yourself, it just gets harder and harder.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. Right, we're going to take a quick break, and afterwards, we've got some of your questions. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here, and I'm joined by Ben Jarman.
Wagwan.
Dan Cook.
Hi, Sammy.
And Nathan Martin.
USA. Is that how slow enough for
no, it's
you?
Like USA. It's like honestly, blew my brain. It's the best thing about the weekend. All right, let's get into some questions then. Thank you for sending them in. First is from Will of the People at the Will Hutton, who says, can we get an update on Carvalho? He's been nearly there on his injury for a while now. A small conspirational part of my brain wonders whether it has something to do with his contract and whether Marco Silva's keeping him off being displayed in a metaphorical shop window. Tell me I'm being silly. Who wants to tell Will he's being silly?
Being silly, mate.
Being silly.
Dan, is he being silly?
He's being silly.
Are we sure though? Like,
I think one thing people that are forgetting here is that because a toe sounds like an insignificant thing,
it sounds like a
bit of a made up injury, but try running with a toe that is really sore and then revisit this discussion.
And Marco Silva is not Jose Mourinho, who would tell you if you had a broken toe, you know, this is no big deal, just, you know, as he did with Luke Shaw. Like, this is a huge thing. And particularly for this player, you know, he's young, he's got this, the sky's the limit. And Fulham has always, you know, tried to take care of the young players, not to rush them back. And so, yeah, I don't think there's any great dark conspiracy, you know, although, you know, who knows?
But we were in the same similar situation with Zambo during the transfer window, in the sense where there was this conversation, is he staying, is he going? And Marcus Silva was actually quite upfront about it and said he didn't play, he didn't start today because at the moment he doesn't want to be at the club and I'm not playing him because of that. And he's shown that he's going to be honest about those things. So I don't think there's any reason to think that he's making up a toe injury.
Yeah, I think with Fab as well, if you have an injury like that, it needs to be managed back. I mean, toe injuries are one of those injuries that, as you say, they can sound insignificant, but if you let them balloon and you let them linger away, it can actually have quite a detrimental effect on your career in the long term. And he's 18 years old and we need to have him back. I mean, one of the good things is we saw from all the pictures coming out on Friday that he is back in training. So it won't be long before he's back on the pitch. And I guess for all of you Americans and all your fantasy owners, last year I had Devontae Adams in my fantasy team. He had turf toe for 12 weeks. 12 weeks he had a sore toe and he didn't play. Unbelievable.
But one thing I would just like, we didn't talk about too much in the game because it's just like a kind of a constant about how bad championship referees are. And that's another reason, like Wilson, Fabio, all these guys take an absolute hammering when they're on the
Wilson
pitch.
Wilson took hammering yesterday as well.
Yeah, the number of just fouls, although to be fair, Chalobah could have easily had two yellows and got sent off. But like, you know, with Fabio, like these games, we need to make sure that these guys are completely fit, because all you need is for them to go into a challenge at 75% and properly hurt themselves and be out for the rest of the season.
I want to ask, what's the more innocuous Fulham injury? We've got Fabio Carvalho's toe injury. What about Yari Litmanen's ear injury back in 2008? The holy grail of innocuous injuries. I just Googled it. There's still an article on the Mail Online. Fulham striker Yari Litmanen has sustained an ear injury and will miss Saturday's Barclays Premier League clash at Manchester City. Litmanen, who had just recovered from a groin problem, was struck by the ball in training and is out for another week.
He was terrible, wasn't he, for us?
Maybe the Great Escape wouldn't have happened, because that's the Manchester City game. That's the comeback from 2-0 down. Maybe.
This is your butterfly effect moment right here. Yeah. The ear leads to everything.
Yari Litmanen's ear injury saved Fulham. We wouldn't have got to the European
Kutcher.
Final.
Ashton Kutcher played Yari Litmanen when he was on loan.
it all transcended on that one moment where Litmanen got an ear injury. Drexian Wavejumper says, how much can we attribute the clear dip of form with the absence of Carvalho and Tete? How much of a cause for concern is this? Now, we've touched on Carvalho loads, so let's move on from him. But I think the Kenny Tete one we've kind of forgotten, but he was such an asset. I never forget that Middlesbrough game. He was unreal in that match. And I genuinely thought we had the next Cafu at right back going to play for us this season. Such a shame that he's been injured. And look, I like Dennis, but Dennis Adoy is not Kenny Tete. And I think that it is showing a little bit. And I don't think he would be the answer to all our prayers. I don't think we'd be sat here on maximum points if it was Kenny Tete hadn't been injured. But I do think maybe people are looking at Carvalho, but actually I think Tete's injury is a real blow to how we want to play.
And you also think about, like, for rep the Americans, but Anthony Robinson, like what happens with him on that side, and just that those sort of bursting runs, if you're able to complement those on either side, it just... It opens up and creates a huge amount of pressure. I think you obviously, we're not going to pick up all the points if he's playing, but we're a much better side. He's just bigger. He's more physical. He's got that speed. And I think it is a kind of a good shout of someone that we're not appreciating his absence quite as much as we should be.
I think what you miss actually a lot, I mean, his end product is clear, Kenny Tete. I mean, that's a huge plus in his part. But his actual mental side, his reading of the game, is huge. And partially in a defensive sense, but that's not where we're missing him. It's going forward. He is so smart in the sense of, am I going on the overlap? Am I going on the underlap? When am I dropping off it and receiving it a little bit deeper? When am I tucking inside? He's just a really smart footballer, Kenny Tete. He's outrageously good, and we were always going to miss him. And we were never going to really be able to replace him fully anyway. But it does show. And when, you know, against Middlesbrough, those first couple of games, I took a mate to the game, and I genuinely said, this is the best right back the Championship has ever seen. And I may be wrong. I might be forgetting someone exceptional, but we do miss Kenny. And he was a key cog in this system, because attacking wing backs are a key cog in any silver system.
I think that you see the runs Adoy make. And look, Adoy, you know, supports Wilson on the right-hand side. He did so several times, particularly in the first half yesterday. I think it's that intelligence, though. I think Adoy's runs are often fairly predictable. I know where Dennis Adoy is going to go. He's going to overlap. He's going to give the option. He's going to be fine. As you say, Kenny Tete varies it up so much, the overlap, the underlap, and sometimes he doesn't overlap at all. He hangs back. And I think there's just a bit more nuance to his game than Dennis. And this is not shitting on Dennis. I think he's a great player, and I think he's doing a fine job at right back. But look, it's hard to replace someone of the quality of Kenny Tete. I mean, Dennis Adoy just needs to start doing the back thing again and similar stuff. He needs to vary it up a little bit, you know, a bit more back thing, Dennis. That's what we want to see. You did it in the first game, you spoiled us, and we've never seen it come out since. Ben, I'll ask you this one. John Brooker asks, would it have been better to bring on Muniz for Bobby Reid to increase the goal threat?
I'm going to say no, purely because I think that Bobby Reid offered so much in that central pocket. I think he got in and around Mitrovic more than any player did in the first half. He gave us a real focal point aside of Mitrovic, and Mitrovic loves to play little 1-2s off of Bobby. I think they understand each other really, really well. I think the one thing that you do if you bring Muniz on is you revert to 4-4-2. And when you do that against a back three, it's just not going to work. I don't feel like you get enough coverage across the pitch, and they can quite easily go and direct the ball through the middle of the pitch. Whereas if you have a 10, it sort of becomes like an amalgamated three. It also means that you have proper wingers, which means that they can keep their wing backs back. So I personally don't think that Muniz would have been the right introduction there. I think that everyone wants to see him, and I do too, because I think he's quite an interesting and exciting player. Obviously, one that's come out of Brazil, already scored quite a nice goal for us, albeit in a defeat. But I feel like that would have been the wrong decision yesterday. Yes, it gives you two focal points, but secondly, it takes away a lot of pace out the counter as well. And we were doing that. We were countering quite well. So yeah.
I think also there was nothing wrong with Fulham's strategy in terms of getting the winner yesterday. The strategy was unbelievable. The amount of chances we made, like Silva must be thinking, I can't do any more there. I got the game plan in that final 10, 13 minutes. Absolutely spot on, Dan. Like, he can't control the amount, the chances that we missed. And so therefore, yeah, that's why I just can't see that Muniz for Reed would have been a sensible suggestion, because ultimately we should have come out of the game and won.
Ultimately, we came out of the game and lost.
We did lose the game. We lost it yesterday. I don't settle for points, Ben. We either win or we don't win.
No, I think this is going to sound sort of counterintuitive and a bit ridiculous, but I think actually the Cavalera substitution worked really well if it wasn't for the fact that it was Ivan Cavalero, the player. it sounds ridiculous, but tactically it worked brilliantly, because there was a couple of times that Cav got in behind and it was causing them real issues. The issue is that he doesn't have a whiff of end product. And there was, the casing point was he got nicked the ball first on the flank, got into the edge of the area, unchallenged, was able to put a ball in, and he hit the first man. And now that tactically everything was right there apart from the end product. So I think the Cavalera substitution worked relatively well. It's just the fact that I don't like beating Cav up every week, but I think he's just in a really, really bad place at the moment. And I think he could actually do with a little bit of a break from this team, because he's just fighting his way to try and find something to happen, and it's just not working for him.
I was talking to Jack a little bit throughout the second half, and he turned around and said to me at one point, and I did nearly fall over, he said that actually he thought that Knockhart would have been, I don't think he was in the squad. He turned around and said he thought that Knockhart would have been the better substitution had he been available, because he was the only winger that will ultimately stretch a game that will have some sort of, Jack said end product, I don't necessarily agree with it, but I do feel like he has a point. There was a point where the game needed to be stretched, especially when it was at 1-0 to us, because Bristol were coming back into it a little bit. But I do completely agree with you, Dan. I think that Cav just needs to relax into it. Like, there's so much, like, so many points in life where you just try and force it and it never works. The more you relax into it, the more things will work for you.
And just, and like, think about the Palmer goal for Bristol City. You know, if that's Cav in that moment, there's no way that, you know, that's going out of the stadium. I mean, he had his own opportunity and he hits this volley. Yeah. The volley is just like,
he'd literally just come on and you're like,
Ben's right. It's like, you know, it's like playing tennis or something. He's like, don't try to hit too much power. Just, you know, just shape it and just, you know, just try to put it in. And instead, you know, he just tries to thwack it, and it's not a drive down the fairway. It's ridiculous.
That one killed me. That one absolutely killed me. I was like, he's come on. I was like, it's Cav. He's going to shut everyone up. No.
Yeah, in fairness, you did go quite quiet after that.
Did I? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you were Devo.
I just couldn't believe what I was witnessing and how many missed chances. By the time I think the third Mitrovic chance hit the bar, like the away end, there was people just smashing jumpers against seats. It was just carnage. People just were like, what is this? What is happening? How have we missed so many chances? A couple more questions then. Ibs asks, we did touch on this. I'll go to you on this one, Nathan. Did you guys love the balance between Harrison Reed and Seri in the middle? It gave us so much control and assurance. A potential Premier League partnership with Carvalho in front of them?
Yes. I mean, I think we've said it multiple times. You know, sort of Seri's resurgence under Silva is just simply sublime. I think, was that how many S's in a row? That was impressive. I was kind of halfway through it, just kept going. No,
I've been reading lots of Henry Winter recently, haven't you?
Exactly. Yeah. I've read Zone.
That was a touch of the Cam Ramsey's there.
Exactly. But no, Siri is playing just exceptional football. I mean, and it's not just the sort of the champagne stuff that everyone was, you know, touting him for, and we saw glimpses of when we were in the Premier League. What makes me most happy about Sarri is just seeing him track back, and seeing him shout at players, and seeing him slide in for tackles. It's doing everything that you have to do to be successful in the Championship, and ultimately, you know, I'd love to have him in the Premier League if he's going to keep playing like this. You pair him with someone like Harrison Reed, and I think it's a brilliant partnership. Reed was, they had kind of no answer for Reed. He was just a terrier, you know, hoovering around the pitch. And that then allows Sarri to create a bit more. And we get to have some of that attacking, you know, flair that he does have. And I actually think Sarri has some of that end product. And so if you take a little bit of pressure off of him, then we have one more potential goal scorer who's able to come up and make a difference.
On this, we have a separate question from Daniel, which is kind of opposite to what Ib says. I'll go to you on this one, Dan. He says, do you think swapping Reed and Seri's positions would have solved half our problems? It would have given us more control in midfield. And whilst Reed did well, I felt off the ball in the box, he got in the way and has no end product, while Sarri isn't as good defensively. I would argue that's a potentially unpopular opinion, but I can see the logic in it.
I'd say it's sort of a logical thought to think that we've often seen Harrison Reed as that sort of screen, as the deepest midfielder he's played for us. And he's played really well there. But I actually think that the balance is really good as it is, because what you get is that you allow Sarri to distribute. And he is fantastic at that. Just if you watch him play, that he is always looking to pick up a little bit of space, in between usually that first press and that midfield line, and then he always knows where he's planning on then to distribute that ball. And having someone who ticks the play over like that at the base is just, it's a pleasure to watch. It's sort of reminiscent of sort of what K-Mac used to do for us, in that sense of just being that, if we use our American terms, we've got a quarterback in there. And then what you get with Harrison Reed is that you can get him using his dynamism and just flitting about and being a bit of a nuisance. He is a bit of a nuisance when he's in that more sort of eight role, because he just doesn't give anything up. And whilst I do have issues with him in the final third, because he's just, out of everyone we have in the midfield, he is the least instinctive goal scorer. I don't think I've ever seen him take a decent shot, potentially. I think actually took one at Everton away.
Yes, he
can definitely work on that area of his game, but I think the balance as we have it now, I really like it. And I think that whilst it does can leave us open, you have that dynamism, Harrison Reed, you know that he is going to be able to track back and help Sarri out. So I like it as it is.
One final question. This one is from Neil Stewart, Ben. He says, when do we start to panic?
We don't.
I mean, at what point though? At what point?
We don't need to.
If we're 12 at Christmas?
We're class. Doesn't matter. No, I think yes, like yesterday, like don't press the panic button after yesterday. Like we don't need to. Like you're going to get games where you create loads and loads of chances and you don't put them all away. But ultimately, on the other side, you're going to get loads of games where you create two chances and you score two goals. Like Fulham have enough in the tank to do well this season and at the very least be in the playoffs. If everything comes together, which we know it haven't, we've seen glimpses of it at the start of this year, it's automatic promotion and it's hands down us and West Brom that are two of the best teams in the division. Like, yeah, Cov have had a great start. Yeah, QPR have had a decent start. Yeah, there are good teams out there that have got good players and they have talented managers, right? But ultimately, this is going to be a two-team league and Fulham are going to be one of them. It's just a case of getting all the cogs to figure themselves out. And I think we saw enough in the second half yesterday to understand that those cogs aren't far away from working together seamlessly. I mean, you just don't, I don't panic. We're like 9 games in. We can't be panicking now. We've got 30 odd left and we've got more than enough to get through the season. So yeah, don't panic.
I do wonder, Dan, if you look at the fixtures that are coming up in October, you know, they're starting to get a little bit tougher, right? We've had this quite nice start and maybe Fulham haven't taken advantage of it as much as maybe we should have. But I'm looking at that QPR game. We've got Cardiff City, I know they're on a bad run, and Ben Brereton Diaz absolutely schooled them yesterday. And then you've got West Brom at the end of the month. I'm really excited to see Fulham go up against these teams that, you know, should technically on paper give us much more of a game. And I really think that Fulham will thrive in those bigger, more difficult games.
Actually, I couldn't agree more, apart from the West Brom one, which I'll touch on in a second. But I think that in terms of the teams we've got coming up, we're looking at coming up against teams who are a bit more expansive. You know, we're coming against a Swansea team that like to try and dominate possession. You've got a Coventry team who try and play on the deck, a QPR team that are incredibly expansive. And that sort of plays into our hands because it means that we're not trying to break through a low block, which has been a massive problem for us against Reading. It was a problem for us against Blackpool, and it was again against Bristol in the first half. And so I think it just allows us actually to use our quality in those situations. When you've got a team that try and go toe-to-toe with you, if you've got individual players who are better, in general, that's going to tell. So if a team tried to go and play Manchester City in the Premier League and they tried to go toe-to-toe with them, if we tried to do that, we wouldn't have a hope because they have the better individual players. But you see teams go to the Etihad and they nick a point because they're able to sit back in a low block and it's hard to break down. So I think that it does help us. West Brom, on the other hand, I think is going to be a pain of a fixture because they are the complete antithesis of how we play, really. And this isn't a slur on them. I think they're an incredibly exciting side. And that's going to be our biggest test this season. I think it's going to be a tough one. But in terms of the games we've got coming up, I think it's actually good for us that we're coming up against teams who are going to let us, who are going to try and offer up a bit more of a fight in the attacking third and just maybe let us try and run through them.
Cool. Right, well, up next, we're going to preview Wednesday's game against Swansea City. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. It's Sammy here with Ben, Dan and Nathan. Let's look ahead then to Swansea on Wednesday, kind of the end of this mammoth run of games that Fulham have had, where it's been Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Wednesday. And again, yeah, Swansea come to Craven Cottage. Great memories of the last time that Swansea came to Craven Cottage on a weeknight when Mitrovic bagged late, he missed the penalty, then we scored in the 92nd minute. It was one of the last games before COVID at home. The scenes in the Hammersmith end, even George Singer absolutely lost. I was with him that game. He went ballistic, shirt off, swinging it round his head. You love to see it.
That's because our XG was above one for the first time all season.
He was like, we've done it.
Yes, XG. Positive XG.
Okay. Nathan, this is a game that Fulham really need to get back to winning ways. Swansea have been stuttering a little bit under Russell Martin. They got their first home win on Saturday against Huddersfield. It was far from convincing. They're not the side that they were last year. And hopefully, as Dan said, a slightly more expansive side, a side that wants to play football. And I think this could be the game for Fulham just to get back to winning ways. And that would be really, really nice.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that this should be it. We should start out, you know, fast out of the gates. The only caution was just going back through their fixtures. Both of their wins are 1-0 wins where they score in the first 20 minutes and you know, hold on. They've obviously not played against us. But at the same time, you know, it is one of those things where, you know, we do need that early goal. We need something to sort of settle things down. And I think if we get the early goal, I think we will kill it off. I don't think there'll be an issue there. But I think that if we let them stay in it, you leave the door open and they do get a goal, they're going to sit back and defend like the Dickens. And I think we will have all kinds of trouble. So, you know, this should be exactly what the doctor ordered. Silva, you know, gets the formation right. And we hopefully, you know, come out fast and strong and tear them open. Because we do have a bunch of really tough fixtures coming up. And, you know, if at the end of October we're not picking up a few more points, then maybe we start at least moving to amber green or whatever the sort of code might be for starting to wonder about not panicking, but being slightly concerned.
The government has dropped the traffic light system, but Nathan has full on picked it up for Fulham FC. Ben, we've been rotating a little bit in the last few weeks. Do you see any rotation coming in for the Swansea game? You'd imagine that maybe Silva might look to keep that Seri-Reed partnership going.
I actually think I'd quite like to see a Seri Reed partnership just blossoming there in the middle of the pitch. I think that it offers so much for us in and out of possession that we'd be mad to almost discard it. I know earlier on Nathan said he really loves Josh Onuma, and I'm still 3 years in and I still can't decide what Josh Onuma does. I do like him. I think obviously he's got tech like Onuma. You know, you don't get into a song by AJ Tracy without being decent at football, but I mean, I can't work him out. I really can't. I think his first touch is brilliant. I think that after that, I think that he lacks a little bit of confidence. He always looks like he's never matched sharp, but I don't know whether that's just me. But yeah, I think that having Seri and Reed in there would be brilliant. One thing, I do actually really like Russell Martin as a manager. I think that last year, MK Dons produced some brilliant football. Obviously, one of our ex-players was in the heart of that midfield that produced so much good football for MK Dons in Matt O'Riley. And I think that he really blossomed under Russell Martin and they played some brilliant football. So I do think there is an element of Swansea that you have to be very, very much aware of. And when you lose someone like Andre Ayew, a player of that calibre in this league, obviously it's going to hit you hard. But that being said, it almost screams 92nd minute Grimes winner, doesn't it? Because he was at Craven Cottage for half of transfer deadline day. So
yeah,
look forward to that one, guys.
Dan, obviously Matt Grimes is a player that we were linked to all summer. I thought it was inevitable that we were going to sign him in the end. I was really shocked, actually, when we did kind of plump for Chalobah and it did look like kind of a straight decision. Are we going to pay the money for Grimes or are we going to go for Chalobah? And it seemed like we got such a good deal on Chalobah. It seems that silly to pass it up, really. It does have a Grimes goal a little bit written in destiny.
It does, but at the risk of sticking my neck out here, this is having seen Swansea this season. Whilst Russell Martin is, I think, as Ben said, he's a very exciting manager and he's very intent on playing really good football. And he's actually been quite progressive with the way he's played. He's brought new ideas. Swansea haven't really quite bought into it yet, and they have just picked up their second win. In their first win, it all kicked off a little bit after the game because Russell Martin suggested that the players actually went AWOL and sort of started doing their own thing because they didn't quite buy into the system and they started playing in their own way. And I think that this is actually a good chance that if we can, as Nathan said, get an early goal against, I think we're going to see a different side to Fulham on Wednesday because I think Swansea are going to try and dominate the ball. They have done all season. They've got the highest percentage possession on average this season by a fair distance. If we can get an early goal and start getting players like Harry Wilson and Bobby Reid in behind and causing Swansea issues, I think we could see a little bit of turmoil on the pitch from them because they don't think that's the right way to play against a team like us. So I think that this is actually a really good opportunity for us. And whilst they are quite a good side with a good manager, they've sort of not, there's not that cohesion there yet. And it's quite a good time to play them, I think. So I think I think this could be the game where we get ourselves back on track and maybe get more than a couple of goals.
Here we go. Dan Cook said it first.
I can't believe I've just said that.
You want to say on a podcast, I think Fulham will win this game, but you do it on a Fulham podcast and something feels alien about it. So well done for not giving the kind of like standard podcast answer of, oh, it'll be a tough game. Maybe they'll come. You know, you stuck your neck out on the line. I don't think it's a crime. So we'll see what happens on Wednesday.
I just think we're well suited to playing against this Swansea side.
Well, I very much hope so. And we'll see what happens on Wednesday. Dan, the last thing you need to do is stick your head above the parapet again and pick the podcast name. So what are you going to go for?
I think we have to go for a moment that I will never forget, I think, from football, and it will long live in the memory beyond that one or draw. But Reece Porter's Blow Eye Army.
Yeah, I think it's the best name by far that came from the three word reviews. And as you say, Dan, you know, I've been to see 3-1 all draws at Bristol City. They all do blend into one another, and I imagine they will in 5 or 6 years' time. But hopefully, that moment there will live much longer than the memory of yesterday's game. So well done, Reece. Thank you again for introducing the podcast today, and that was a really nice touch. And thank you to his mum Kelly for organising that. And yeah, that's it. For the podcast today. Myself, Jack and Peter will be back on Thursday, the Thursday Club, reviewing Wednesday's game against Swansea City and then looking ahead to Saturday's tough trip up to Cov. We'll also be talking all about Jimmy Hill Day because that's what the game has been designated as on Saturday up in Coventry. Our first meeting with Coventry City since the 60s. It's one of those mad, weird things about football and how Fulham have just managed to avoid playing the Coventry for such a long time. So it'll be fun to preview that one. And yeah, thank you very much to my guest today, Dan Cook. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Sammy.
Ben Jarman, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sammy.
And USA, Nathan Martin, thank you very much.
Good to see everybody. That's 3 points, 3 points. Come on, we need three.
Yeah, exactly. Plus three on Wednesday, please. Have a good week. Come on, you Whites.